You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone, Rob Guest from football.london here, and welcome to the latest episode of Gold and Guest Talk Tottenham, sponsored by NordVPN. Joining me as ever, it's Alistair Gold. Ali, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Hope you're well too. Yeah, kind of exciting and interesting time ahead for Spurs, especially after that Villa result. It's kind of galvanised, I think, a lot of people and certainly given everyone a bit of a buzz in the workplace this week. And you know, two big games again coming up that if Spurs can win, can put themselves in a very promising position by the time all the big boys return to action. But that's just one of many things we'll discuss in this podcast today.
Yeah, we will be discussing Saturday's game against Fulham at Craven Cottage later on, and also, you know, the fight for Champions League football, because it is quite an important night in terms of potentially a fifth Champions League place for the Premier League for next season. But before that, we'll start with what happened at Tottenham Hotspur's training ground yesterday, and another classy moment from Ange Postecoglou. I mean, if you couldn't love him enough already, I mean, go and take a look at this video on Spurs' social media channels. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's lovely. Young Owen, who was at the... it was like the big like annual kind of fans forum, wasn't it? I say annual, it hadn't been one for like 6 years, but hopefully it'll be an annual thing again. Owen was the lad that Ange made sure that they didn't stop prematurely and let him get his question in at the end. And they obviously met him afterwards as well in a bit of a meet and greet. And it's just lovely. It's just a really lovely moment, this video from training this week. And the excitement when Owen sees him, and also just kind of the way Ange reacts, it's lovely. Honestly, it's one of those things we can't really do it any justice by discussing it or saying it out. You have to kind of watch the video. It takes him off to his office to show him that he's got a photo of him from that fans forum night as well, that sits in his office with all his family photos as well. It's quite interesting because I didn't obviously know that was going to happen, but I did a piece for my newsletter this week all about the kind of paternal influences at Tottenham Hotspur, whether that be as Ange, as the father figure for this young group of players, whether that be, you know, Kulusevski talking about his dad this week and all the efforts he put in. We know about Son and his dad, and there's a lot of the players that have just become dads or last 6 months, a year or so. You know, the likes of Madison's had twins, his partner, Benson Kerr, Lo Celso, Ben Davies, Eric Dyer. Kulusevski is about to become a dad next month. Obviously, Romero become a dad. Well, he's technically 3 years old now, I think, his little boy. But, you know, you can see the influence that's had on him. And, yeah, it was just a piece about the kind of, not to dismiss the role of any mothers, of course, with Mother's Day having just been, they played a massive role in so many of these players' lives. Old Brennan Johnson as well, with his dad, David Johnson as well. It was I managed to find kind of a fair few links and stuff. And I just felt, as soon as I saw this video, it's like, oh, that's such a kind of a, just kind of shows the fatherly way I think Ange has around the club. And just also, I think the delight on his face, it's probably the happiest we've seen Ange, you know, in moments like that. He really kind of relishes this role he has as someone that kind of just creates this great example as well. And it was lovely. I mean, it was all in, they were all wearing kind of coloured socks, weren't they? I mean, you looked at it kind of a bit more in detail.
Yeah, the way, if you've seen the training photos, I think usually the players are just usually wearing white sports socks when they train, but this time they all had coloured socks on, all odd socks as well. And Spurs as a club, they're proudly supporting Down Syndrome Awareness Week. World Down Syndrome Day is next Thursday, March the 21st, and the players were, you know, promoting the Lots of Socks campaign. And as part of training yesterday, there was a number of young people with Down syndrome and their families there just watching on. It just seemed like a really, really, you know, nice day for all involved. There was a big group photo after the game, the training session. And yeah, it was just something that everyone would have taken something out of. It was just a really, really nice day. And that moment for young Owen, absolutely fantastic. You could see on the video, as soon as Ange came out for training, Owen spotted him, ran straight up to him, massive hug. And then for Ange to take him to the office and show him, you know, that photo of them both from the fans forum, pride of place in the office, along with the photos with his family members. It's just sheer class. Is Ange made such an impression up in Scotland with Celtic. He'll have done the same at his previous clubs, and he's doing exactly the same at Tottenham now. And I think he's probably the best thing that's happened to Tottenham for years. He's really stamped his mark on the club, on the team as well. And I think all Tottenham fans just have so much to look forward to over the coming years. I think everyone's probably, you know, happy that the club have someone like him in charge.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's kind of good vibes at the moment. It really is. And I was just looking through some of the photos and the videos there from the training sessions, because it was the men's and women as well, both of them. And this kind of, like you say, to raise awareness of Down Syndrome Awareness Week. And yeah, it just looks like everyone had a really great time as well. And that's, you know, we obviously fixate on the football and everything that comes with the Premier League, you know, qualifying for Champions League, all of these kind of big, kind of lofty things that we kind of feel they are. But sometimes you just got to drill down and just have little moments like this that mean so much to people as well. And I think mean a lot to the players and Ange as well. I think it's kind of part of their, I was going to say, job with quote marks, that they probably really enjoy. Just kind of knowing that they are making an impact on people's lives. It's lovely to see. And like I say, watch the videos. Obviously young Owen, but Albie as well, going through training as well. And lots of people getting involved there. And like you say, the families as well. It must be wonderful for them to watch kind of moments like that kind of unfold. And just lovely stuff all around.
What we've also spotted from the big group photo that they had after training, a couple of faces back involved, one of those being Richarlison. He's been out for the past few games, obviously got that knee injury in the defeat against Wolves. Ange, in his press conference a couple of weeks ago, said it'd be 3 to 4 weeks. A few days later, you know, Richarlison speaking after the game against Crystal Palace, he's basically just thrown everything up in the air with what he was saying, mm-hmm. that he was expecting to be back on the training pitch ahead of the Aston Villa game and potentially involved in that one. He wasn't involved in the game at Villa Park, but given he is back in training, it looks like he may play some part potentially against Fulham on Saturday. And I think for Richarlison personally, I think he'll be really pleased to be back, especially with two Brazil games on the agenda, because he has been named in the Brazil squad for the England and Spain friendlies. In November, he missed out. And for the South Americans, I think it just means so much to them to be involved for the national team. So this is another one he wouldn't have wanted to miss out on the back of an injury. So yeah, I think for Richarlison, he will be, you know, looking to play a big part against Fulham on Saturday. And then for the national team, during the first international break of the season, what takes place from Monday?
Yeah, obviously, we have to wait still for Andrew's press conference tomorrow to get complete confirmation that he wasn't just involved in, you know, running and things like that. He was kitted out, but whether he was, you know, actually involved in the group training session, we're yet to find out. But yeah, certainly it's a good sign, I think, him being kitted up and having his boots on and certainly being involved in, even just a photo like this, it suggests that he's doing something out there. But yeah, whether he's in that required level yet to be put back in, we'll find out tomorrow. But I mean, you also noticed another face that was in there and another face that wasn't in there, didn't you?
I did. Alfie Dorrington is back. He pulled up with a hamstring injury, didn't he, in an under-21 match towards the end of January. he's been a regular in first team training at Hotspur Way this season, and then also in the match day squad pretty much from November onwards, just because of all the injuries at the back. So that's good to see young Alfie back on the training pitch, and he'll be looking to, you know, potentially be involved in the match day squad again between now and the end of the season, especially if Mickey van der Ven is to miss out over the coming weeks. There was no Mickey van der Ven, which, let's be honest, not really the biggest of surprises, no, given he came off in the Aston Villa game. And that Ange was speaking yesterday, I think before training, about Mickey van der Ven, and basically said they're still waiting on, is it further test results, mm-hmm, and he looks unlikely to be involved against Fulham, and just hopefully he won't be missing too many games.
Yeah, I'll give you the exact quote. He said it to Sky Sports yesterday. We're still getting all of the information in. We don't think it's anything major. We'll probably get some more information at the back end of this week. So he's obviously unlikely for Fulham, but with the international break, hopefully that means he doesn't miss too much more after that.
So Ange will be speaking tomorrow from 1 p.m. at Hotspur Way, yep, to preview the Fulham game. And I think that's going to be the main question for him straight away. Just an update on the fitness of van der Ven. Good to see Richarlison back with the group again, Alfie Dorrington. And I think all Spurs fans will just be desperate to find out tomorrow what the extent of van der Ven's injury is.
Yeah, I mean, there's little things to kind of clear up, I guess, like the whack to the head that Vicario got. I presume he's okay. I think we said in the last pod, he had to kind of slather, not Ange, but the physio had to slather all this kind of stuff on the back of his head to make sure it didn't bleed anymore or anything like that. So I guess just double checking that he's okay, especially with no kind of senior goalkeeper backing him up right now. We haven't heard otherwise as at this point. Elsewhere, I don't think there's any other main issues, really. I mean, Saar picked up a little bit of a whack towards the end of the first half, but obviously then contributed that fantastic assist for James Maddison. It's just really then about training ground injuries. And you know, the hope is that maybe, I'm going to touch some wood there, you touch that desk. There's hopefully we're at the stage now where players and sports science staff are starting to adapt to the Postecoglou way, and hopefully less, you know, freak training ground injuries, or, you know, we're getting them kind of almost every week a few months back. But he said that himself, Postecoglou, that is a part of the change to his regime and the intense training sessions they do and everything. And people's bodies do have to adapt to that. And hopefully, you know, these players now kind of got an idea of what he wants from them and kind of how to manage their bodies that a little bit better, I guess, as well. Obviously, van der Ven's out. It'll be a big chance for Radu Dragosin. And that's kind of the thing now. With the squad being in a strong-ish state, there's always an opportunity for someone who's almost as, if not as, equally talented to come in.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's just the chance Radu Dragosin's been waiting for. Not really had a lot of football since his January move from Genoa. It was basically minutes here and there against Manchester United, Everton and Brentford off the bench. I think they'd gone to Villa Park last Sunday not expecting to play at all, or maybe a couple of minutes here and there. So I think it was 51 minutes or so he got under his belt altogether, which has only gone to work in his favour. And he performed well, so it's a big chance for him to take. And I think, like we said on the last podcast, Spurs have three quality centre-backs now, so it's not a case of once van der Ven's back from injury, he automatically comes back into the team. If, you know, Dragosin performs really well, then maybe it's his shirt to lose. But that's only a good thing for Spurs going forward, and, you know, a really good headache for Postecoglou to have at such a crucial time in the season.
Yeah, I was just thinking back now. So you're saying about, obviously, we know Alfie Dorrington is back in training. I'm just wondering whether he gets on the bench or not, or whether he goes as an extra man. I would imagine you've probably got Ben Davies there to cover the position, haven't you? And I think Emerson as well, of course. That probably allows you to then bring someone like Skippy or Brian Hill, I suppose, back onto the bench. So yeah, it might not mean that Alfie Dorrington gets on that bench, but yeah, I mean, it's just good for him to be back. Good for him to get back in the under-21s as well, who have, you know, had a couple of results, haven't quite gone their way in the last couple of weeks. And that maybe has coincided with him not being in the back line. So, yeah, if he can finish the season strongly, I think for him it's probably trying to push his claims now to get involved in the pre-season tour and maybe a loan move next season. So, yeah, I mean, it's you know, it can only be a good thing, him being involved in first team training, regardless of whether he's in the match day squad or not.
Yeah, so Tottenham go into this weekend's game against Fulham, fifth in the Premier League table, just 2 points behind Aston Villa now, following that brilliant 4-0 win at Villa Park last Sunday. Villa are in action in the Premier League this weekend. There's only four games just because of the FA Cup quarterfinals taking place. Villa play on Sunday away at West Ham, which is going to be a bit of a tricky game. So Spurs potentially have the opportunity to leapfrog them, maybe for a matter of hours. There's chances there for them to move into fourth. And I think that's where, you know, Ange and Spurs will want to finish the season unless they can get, you know, another place higher in the running because of some big games coming up. But as, you know, everyone's well aware, fifth place in the Premier League could potentially equal a Champions League place for next season. Big evening on the cards in terms of the Europa League and Europa Conference League as well. Ali, you've been looking at the rules and that today. Do you want to let everyone know about what's happening?
Yes, the reason we chuckle is because, yes, it did make my head hurt a little bit reading it, but I think I've kind of got it all down now and completely understand it. Kind of, you mentioned there the Villa West Ham game as well. That'd be interesting because both teams have got matches tonight in European competition. And the reason tonight is quite important is because the way they work. Actually, let's start from the beginning. Let's explain it exactly, just in case anyone isn't aware of what's happening. So, Champions League is going to be bigger next season. It's a revamped version, extra teams, and one of the byproducts of that is that it means that two of Europe's kind of major leagues are going to get an extra place each in the Champions League next season. So obviously with England and the Premier League, that would mean that rather than just the top four getting it, fifth place would also get it. And the way they've done this to make it as fair as they possibly can, although some countries might not agree that it's entirely fair, is that it's essentially the coefficients is the word to use it. But the way they work this out is it's like a ranking. It's like another league table of itself with the different countries and their competitions. And they add up all of the points each league gets for their team's performances in the Champions League, Europa League, and the Conference League. So just to give you an idea of the point scoring system for this, each win gets 2 points for its league and each draw 1 point. This is all in their European competitions. But there's also bonus points available for each competition. So those teams that reach the Champions League group stages get 4 bonus points. Round of 16, 5 points. And then the quarterfinal, semifinal, and final all get 1 bonus point each time a club gets into that round. Europa League, group winners get 4 bonus points, group runners-up get 2, and then again 1 point for round of 16, quarterfinal, semifinal, and final. Then down to the Conference League, the group winners get 2 bonus points, group runners-up 1, and then there's 1 on offer for those teams who reach the semifinal and then the final. So there's loads of kind of points towards these coefficients available. And what they then do is the points are totaled up for each country, and then they're divided by the number of clubs they had at the competition, like had across the European competitions to start the season. And that gives them the coefficient average. Hopefully that makes sense. So I guess that is a kind of, a fairer way, I guess, because if you have less teams in it, if you're averaging out, then yeah, maybe that is a way to do it. So the current, if you're wondering, the current standings, like the charts, the coefficient rankings, Italy and Germany are on top. Italy, top of the pile with 16.571 is their coefficient average right now. Germany are second with 15.928. England are third with 15 exactly. And then behind them come France in fourth with 14.416 and Spain fifth with 14.187. So then you've got another element to it, obviously. It's the who's got how many clubs left in European competitions. That's another aspect to it. And Obviously, England have had the bonus this week of Man City and Arsenal getting through to Champions League quarterfinals. The irony of the fact that Arsenal getting through to Champions League quarterfinals could help Spurs. Could be quite amusing. Same with West Ham tonight if they were to win as well. Germany's still got Bayern and Dortmund in the Champions League. Italy have got no representatives now in the Champions League because they lost Napoli and Inter this week. So that's a help to English kind of hopes. So in total, right now, ahead of tonight's fixtures, England have got the most teams remaining in European competition. They've still got six teams involved. Italy have got four, Germany have got five, France have got three, and Spain also have five. But yeah, excuse me, the reason we're saying tonight is quite an important one is because these round of 16 games in the Europa League and the Conference League, really by tomorrow, it could really change the landscape on that and who can get what in these remaining games. Brighton, we'd imagine, are probably going to go out. They're 4-0 down against Roma, the second leg at home. You know, who knows? We saw Bournemouth coming back last night. Never say never.
I mean, last year, Chef Wednesday were losing 4-0 from their playoff game, first leg against Peterborough, still managed to go through. So never say never, but they've got an uphill battle tonight.
Yes, just a tad. But obviously, if they were to turn that round, to knock an Italian side out would help English causes in this coefficient thing. You got Liverpool got Sparta Prague. They're 5-1 up, Liverpool. They're at Anfield. Again, you'd think that the score will remain in their favour. West Ham is a big one as well because they're playing Freiburg, obviously a German team. So if they could knock a German representative out, again, a London rival helping Tottenham would be very, very much appreciated. I mean, it may not end up helping Spurs. Spurs, we hope, will finish top four anyway, and this will all be academic. And actually, it could end up, I guess, impacting Villa. And Villa are one of the teams who are playing. They're obviously playing in the Conference League tonight against Ajax. That's goalless from the first leg. They're at Villa Park tonight. So Villa, in a way, could be playing for their own Champions League future while playing in the Conference League. It's a funny way how it all works. One person who doesn't care in the slightest is Ange Postecoglou. He just doesn't care. It was put to him the other day that, oh, you know, fifth place could be a bit of an insurance policy. And it's like, why? I'm not aiming for fifth place. And it cannot kind of comprehend that attitude, which is great. It's a good way to look at it. And it's a great way for the players, I guess, to be looking at it as well, not to kind of look for some kind of fallback option that might help them out. But let's be honest, Spurs don't often get these things going for them. You know, I always remember with Harry Redknapp, it was the year that they didn't get in despite finishing fourth. You know, that was the quirk of how that worked. So it would be nice, in a way, if they required it, that it worked the other way. But yeah, so keep an eye on the European fixtures tonight. We want the English clubs to do well. Italian and German clubs less so. And just in case Spurs have to turn to that and need that. But look, I think we said it in the last podcast, Spurs win these next two games against Fulham and Luton, and because of the way the fixture schedule works with those FA Cup matches, they could be 5 points off the top coming by the time that, you know, Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City play their games on the Sunday after the international break. Hey, look it upwards.
Yeah, they could. Before we get onto that, we will discuss the benefits of NordVPN first, because we are about halfway through today's podcast. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting in terms of the top four and the title race. But before we get onto that, Ali, do you want to let everyone know about the benefits of using NordVPN?
I like the way you've put that back in there. You know, we're talking about European football, potential European travel next season, and you've reminded us that we have to, of course, talk about NordVPN, which certainly myself and many other people out there might well be using on their European travels next year if Spurs are heading off across the continent, which we hope they will be. And yeah, look, we kind of always do this little spot in the podcast because we do believe in NordVPN. It is obviously, we have got a great partnership with them. I even had someone just, I think it was yesterday, kind of, it's become a bit of a tagline now. They replied to like a story I did saying, remind me of the benefits of NordVPN. It's just like become part of the show. And it's because it's an excellent product, and it is something that, you know, we've used in our kind of work and personal life, because yeah, it's it is the fastest VPN in the world. That means there's no buffering, no lagging, and you can stream your favorite shows from anywhere in the world without your bandwidth throttling. You know it because I say it every week, and it's because I wouldn't say it if I didn't believe in it. And many occasions I've used it, whether it's to stream sports, whether it's to watch TV shows or watch movies or anything around the world, or if it's just to simply for added security when I'm using public Wi-Fi out and about. And not only that, the Outlander NordVPN subscription is cheaper for you in the long run. That's because you can purchase streaming services or bookings from other countries at a much cheaper rate. So, for example, you might want to book a flight from the country that is the destination you're going to rather than booking it from the UK. And you can just set your device to thinking it's in that other country to do so. And it could be a much cheaper flight for you if you do it that way. So it means you're paying out for Nord, but you're actually saving money overall. There's a whole host of other benefits from signing up to NordVPN, so why not give it a go? To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. And as we keep saying, by getting it, you're also helping support our podcast. The link is in the episode description box in case you just missed it.
Going back to what you just mentioned then about Spurs having the chance to move to within 5 points of Arsenal at the top of the Premier League over the next couple of games, because Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool aren't in action this weekend in the Premier League. They've got FA Cup fixtures on the agenda. Well, Arsenal don't. Chelsea, who they were supposed to play, they're in FA Cup action. So there's no game for Arsenal. So Spurs have the opportunity there to, you know, close the gap slightly. It's going to be a really tricky game against Fulham. And then the following weekend, or the weekend after the international break is over, Spurs have Luton at home. You probably expect Spurs to get maximum points against Luton. Certainly won't be easy. Luton are performing well, maybe not getting the points at the moment, but it will be a tough game. And then I think it's the following day, Arsenal, Man City at the Etihad. Huge game in the title race. So Spurs, as it stands, 11 points off Arsenal. But, you know, over the next couple of weeks, that gap could become very slightly smaller, let's say. So it's probably just one of these when you think about it that way. Just how frustrating the results in November were, and then you go back to the draw at Everton at the start of February, 2 points dropped there.
I knew you'd bring that one up.
No, I mean, I've got to mention it where you've dropped points. And then the home defeat against Wolves as well in February. You know, if you win that, you've got another 3 points on the board. And now Spurs themselves could have been in title contention if it just wasn't for these drop points here and there.
Well, Andrew still thinks they are. If you know, he hasn't given up on that yet. I did see something that said that Spurs now can't get relegated. So that's a good thing. apparently Man U still can, I think they said. Because that's the other thing as well. Again, I know Postecoglou doesn't want to look behind him or below him, however you want to describe it. But with United playing in the Cup this weekend as well, if Spurs, you know, do get that, get the win at Craven Cottage, the gap is so big between the top five then and those below. You know, that would take it to 9 points. With like a plus 20 goal difference, or it would be more if they win at Fulham. Yeah, that would be a mountain to climb for United to get anywhere near the top five. It would be pretty much a closed shop. And that's the thing, I think we've been looking at this as all the game in hand is the Chelsea match, but it's kind of not the way this kind of, it almost like this then allows Spurs to play a game in hand this weekend. You know, and it all suddenly the table looks a bit level, looks a bit more equal in terms of games played going into the international break. Yes, they've still got to play Chelsea, of course. But yeah, it does kind of feel like, it's a way of equaling it out. But yeah, it's, I'm intrigued to see if they can get these results, how people view the title race. Does anyone start including them in it? Villa as well. Villa win their two games coming up. They're 3 points off the top. Suddenly, this kind of massive result that Spurs got there in Villa's head, they're probably thinking, well, we're right back up there now as well. So, yeah, this kind of gives them a little bit of a chance, Spurs and Villa, to kind of pull away from those below, but also just get their name back in the conversation, I suppose, in what's happening at the top. I don't think we probably seriously believe they are, either of them, still in it. Maybe just because of the momentum those teams at the top have got. But, yeah, who knows? They've both got to play all of them. You never know how it's going to end up shaking up if they can get a few big wins there.
Yeah, I mean, all Ange Postecoglou and Tottenham can do is just win the games and see where that leaves them in the final few weeks of the season. But when you're looking at the fixtures, Man City against Arsenal coming up, the top three all have to play Villa. I know Villa weren't at the best last Sunday when Spurs hit them for four, but I wouldn't think Villa are going to lose all three games against City, right, Arsenal and Liverpool. And then Tottenham are going to have a big, big say in who wins the title this season, because they've got Man City at home middle of April. Following week, they've got Arsenal at home, and then the start of May, they're going to Liverpool. And those three teams won't want to be coming up against, you know, Spurs in at the business end of the season, where points are so crucial, because they've already, you know, given them real scares this season, and Spurs haven't lost against those three teams in the league. So they're going to be big games. It's just going to be interesting when that Man City game potentially gets rescheduled for, because as it stands at the moment, that's in the calendar for Saturday, April the 20th. That's the weekend of the FA Cup semi-finals, and you probably would expect Man City to beat Newcastle at home in the quarter-finals of the Cup this weekend. So Spurs at home to City, I reckon that potentially be penultimate week of the season. That could be a title decider there at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
What, for Spurs or City, you mean?
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, it's... Yeah, that's the last two fixtures. It was kind of a bit of a gentler end to the season. And it's like, yeah, either Chelsea or City is going to clearly be thrown in between them. Yeah, it is what it is. It's not ideal. But then, you know, Spurs on the whole, certainly in the Premier League, have been absolutely fine at home against City. I think, like you say, they're going to give everyone a run for their money now with a bit of a momentum behind them, a full squad, hopefully. No more injuries, please. They're the ones, I think, that could have a real big say. I do wonder if Villa are going to tire a little bit with their squad, their absences, European games, and that could kind of leave it on Spurs, I think, to be the disruptors of this title race, especially, like you say, with two of the three games against the top three at home. That's a big thing as well. God, that North London derby is going to be huge. It's going to be so noisy. That's going to be a real kind of 12th man game, you'd imagine, with the fans as well. And it's quite exciting. You know, with recent seasons, there hasn't been too much to play for beyond a certain point, or too much exciting stuff anyway. So, that's unfair, isn't it? No, they did have, to be fair, under Conte's first season, they, of course they did, with the top four still in the balance. And maybe this can be that kind of end of the season. And who knows? Yeah, if they can start putting some wins on the board in a row, suddenly everyone else just fears them that a little bit more. And I guess with Postecoglou, it's more about next season as well. And what he is creating right now and what team they're going to become. There's been some quite interesting things, like Mickey van der Ven interviewing just before the for the last game. And Dejan Kulusevski's done a nice interview as well, just talking about what Ange wants them to be. And that's part of this kind of process now over the next couple of weeks. It's further drilling in the Postecoglou Tottenham. So for next season, you can sense he's got real hope that next season they're going to be challenging for something pretty big. This is kind of where the foundations are put in, I guess.
Yeah, very much so. I think the end of the season gives Ange and Tottenham the opportunity to lay down a real marker ahead of next season, especially when you're coming up against Man City, Arsenal and Liverpool in the running, you know. the Champions League place might be the best Spurs can get this season, but that would still be a big, big success given the fact that they didn't qualify for Europe next season. But Ange has huge, huge plans at Tottenham. You can tell that in his press conferences, whenever he speaks. You mentioned earlier in the pod about when he was asked about maybe fifth place being, you know, a bit of an insurance position, really, for a Champions League place for next season. He made it clear he aims for top spot. Why would you aim for anything else? I think that's what all clubs with big, big ambitions do. And Spurs have had, you know, two really, really good transfer windows under Ange, brought some good players in, and they're only going to get better with time under Ange. And, you know, as good as this season has been, next season can be even better if everything clicks into place. They don't have as many injuries. I think Tottenham fans have an awful lot to look forward to over the coming years with Ange in charge.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you bring out the transfer style. I was only thinking of that yesterday, just how high percentage success rate the transfers have been since he's come in. It's actually quite kind of ridiculous, because even if you add in Dragosin and Werner, you know, the impact that they've made, and Dragosin, obviously, we're just starting to see it, and hopefully we'll see it at Fulham as well. And Werner, it's just like the hit rate is out of this world for Spurs. This is a club where people have kind of always moaned about the amount spent. For me, it's been always kind of more about the lack of success in the adaptation of the signings that they've brought, or picking the wrong people, more so than the money. Because, I mean, in Ange's words, if you gave him 100 million, he wouldn't want a 100 million pound player. He'd want two 50 million pound players. And it's kind of, that will fit in with the way Spurs operate quite nicely, because that's what kind of they look to do, is buy the, I say stars for the future, but they're stars that can do it now and can only get better. That's more the idea. I'm struggling to think of anyone. I mean, you can't really kind of include Ashley Phillips in terms of a first team player, because he was kind of brought in for the long term more than now. He was definitely one of those. But yeah, has anyone not worked out? I don't think they have. I mean, Manus Solomon is kind of to be confirmed because of his injury. But that's not really anything to do with the transfer, I guess.
The only one I could think of was Solomon, but let's be honest, he did make an impact in the first few weeks of the season when he was playing, and he can still make an impact for Tottenham once he comes back. But Vicario has been a big success, Mickey van der Ven, James Maddison, the permanent signings of Kulusevski and Pedro Porro.
Yeah,
Werner's had a big impact in the team when he's played. Dragosin's done well in his game time and will become better and have a bigger role to play for Tottenham in the future.
Here's a question. Yeah. Is this the most successful year of transfers Spurs have had in your memory?
Probably.
It has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was going to bring up the summer of 2020, I think it was, the year when Højbjerg signed Joe Roden, Gareth Bale, Sergio Reguilón, I think Carlos Vinicius as well. Everyone was saying that's like a 10 out of 10 transfer window, because we've solved all these positions. Gareth Bale's come back, got a really good left back for the future. But when you're looking back on that window now, it's only really Højbjerg who's made his mark at the football club.
Is it Matt Doherty that window as well?
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And yeah, that one didn't go as planned there. And then you look at previous windows, you know, Jed Spence coming in, not having an opportunity really, club signing, Anna Danjuma last January as well, barely made an impact at the football club. So yeah, I think all in all, looking at the past two transfer windows, probably is the most successful Spurs have been in the market. And fingers crossed that just bodes well going into the summer as well, as Tottenham look to grow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They've got a new recruitment team in place now. Johan Lang, Rob McKenzie as well, and Frederick Leth all kind of working together. And hopefully it does only get better. I was trying to think of other windows. Obviously, you had the 2019 one, which, looking back, was not as successful as it felt at the time. Yeah, obviously, you had Cesc, Tongi, Lo Celso, Jack Clarke. Oh, I'll never forget Pochettino on that preseason tour. I've never seen a manager look so just fed up and frustrated at a transfer window. You just couldn't really ask him any questions about the transfer window because he just got annoyed about it. But yeah, because I only had Tongi in at that point. Yeah, I think it has to be. I think this has to be the best bit of, and when you total it up, including the Porro and the Kulusevski fees, spent a fair chunk as well. You know, you're looking at Maddison 40, Brennan Johnson almost 50. Who was the other biggie? Van der Ven. Yeah, he was in the 40s as well. Kind of when you all add it all up, it's I'm intrigued to see when we get this financial statement that's to come before the end of this month, the club accounts. I do wonder kind of whether they talk about last summer and tag that on the end, because it's going to be in a hefty purchase. Kind of, I mean, they must be in the 200 millions kind of range up there, 250 maybe. If you're adding in the Porro and Kulusevski stuff, which I know some people kind of decide whether they do or don't, depending on what they want to kind of make their point about. But yeah, it's if they can nail it this summer, like they've done that, yeah, who knows what next season can bring. It could be an absolutely thrilling season.
Before we look ahead to next season, big game on the agenda on Saturday at Craven Cottage against Fulham. Spurs have already played Fulham's home ground this season, lost in the Carabao Cup on penalties at the end of August. This one's going to be quite a tricky one. I think Fulham have done well at home this season. It's having a look at the results on home soil in the Premier League. I think it's won about 8 of 13. Beat Arsenal 2-1. I think that was in late December. Comfortably beat Brighton a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
3-0. You know, Marco Silva's gotten playing some decent football. The one away at Manchester United about 3 weeks ago as well. So not a straightforward game at all for Spurs.
No, not in the slightest. Games at Craven Cottage are normally quite difficult, and I would say that this season are going to be even more so, because they've kind of dispensed with quite a few big teams, and even the ones that they've lost to, they've given them a real kind of go as well. Even like just going back to the Carabao Cup semi-finals against Liverpool, they were both really tight games as well. There's been quite a few, obviously. Who did they beat in the quarterfinal? I'm trying to remember now, in the Carabao Cup.
No need to mention that.
Was that the penalty shootout I remember you moaning about?
Yes, Amadou Onana. Yeah, move on, please.
Yeah, you weren't happy, were you? So, I mean, it's going to be a tough game. Spurs are going to have to be at their best. They've got to take the confidence from Sunday's game at Villa Park into it. And just, I guess, trust the football. They know the football now can get them out of so many, not only get them out of problems, but create so many problems for the opposition. And if they go and play the way we know they can, then they're going to give Fulham so many problems. But likewise, they're going to have to be very wary of the threat that they're going to bring. And, you know, with Radu Dragicin likely to come in, it's a big test for him right from the start. But, you know, he's a guy with experience. He's only 22 years old, but he's already got so much experience in Serie A. Obviously, his time at Juventus as well, he's used to the pressure of a big club and big matches too. So, I mean, do you change the team up much apart from him coming in?
I was just going to say that. I think it's just the one change. Why else would you change a winning team and one that was so successful at Aston Villa? I think, yeah, Dragicin for Mickey van der Ven, I see no reason to bring, you know, maybe Timo Werner in or Rodrigo Benteke. No, I think they stay on the bench for now. If Spurs can, you know, get into a decent lead, or if they're needed in the second half, then I think you'll see the likes of Benteke and Timo Werner, and then maybe Richarlison, if he's fit enough to be part of the matchday squad, to come on and try and make an impact. No reason to change other than Dragicin for van der Ven.
Yeah, I can't think of any reason. The only one is if you want to count, kind of exploit certain, if he saw any weaknesses, I guess, in the Fulham kind of ranks, but I don't even know where you'd do that, really, where you'd require that, because Johnson is flying right now. You don't take him out of that team. Kulusevski proved in the second half how dominant he was in terms of three goals involved in out of the four. Sarr only if he had an injury issue. I don't think you'd take him out of that midfield because of his mobility. I don't think you do. And I think you have a very, very strong bench as a consequence as well. And there's so many options to come on. Even like Højbjerg came on at Villa Park and played really well. I know he was playing against 10 men, so you've absolutely got to take that into account. But that move, and the Spurs showed it as well, the one where he dribbles from his own area to the other area pretty much, beats two guys as he's going through, he's still got a part to play and he could still have some big moments for the club for the rest of this season. The days are long gone when I think back to that horrendous semi-final in the FA Cup against Chelsea when they brought Hazard, Fabregas and Costa off the bench and Spurs brought on Nkudu, Vincent Janssen, and I think Kyle Walker as an attacking player because he was out of favour then. And it's just like, yeah, those days right now feel a long way away, which is, bodes well. Like I say, if they're only going to strengthen in the summer as well, who knows? That bench is going to be a nightmare just to get on, let alone be in the first 11.
Yeah, very much so. Squad definitely is getting there. Oliver Skipp and Brian Hill, the unlucky ones last weekend, the Aston Villa, but you'd think a gap opens up for one of them to come in this weekend. And, you know, when you look at Tottenham's squad, building something really special at the club, and that's what all the top clubs have options to come off the bench. And, yeah, I think things are looking good for Tottenham at the moment. Right, we'll leave that there for today's latest episode of Golden Guest Tottenham. We'll be back next week to reflect on the Fulham game and also the fun of the international break. So as ever, thank you for listening and just keep with us at football.london for all your latest Tottenham news. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast. The link is in the episode description box.